Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the Corlin Economics Report, specifically dealing with politics, featuring Jim McKinney and, of course, myself, Big Al. Jim is our major contributor when it comes to political issues. He spends hours daily researching every single topic that you can think of when it comes to politics. The one that Jim and I are the most interested in right now is what's going on as of today, today being September 1st. We are recording on September 1st, Friday. Hunter Biden seems to be totally avoiding any type of indictment. Jimmy, that to me, it really makes no sense. Can you explain that a little bit? And where do we stand today, Jim, in terms of the Hunter Biden debacle?
Yeah, so I think it's becoming more apparent that not only the Democratic Party, but the White House, the Bidens, as well as big mainstream media have been really protecting Joe Biden and Hunter Biden for a while. But so is the Department of Justice, unfortunately, and the FBI. According to, you know, remember, a lot of the arguments and the anger over Hunter Biden is the fact that that laptop was found. The FBI held it for a year. They knew it was legitimate, but then the Democrats, including senior officials in the U.S. intelligence community, 51 officials, signed a document saying that it was Russian misinformation. So the federal government knew, the FBI knew, the Department of Justice knew that it was legitimate. And it's not so much about all the debauchery that Hunter Biden was, you know, doing at the time, the cocaine, the hookers, all that. It's really about the foreign interference and his actual negotiating and working with his father in order to use his father's position, both as former vice president and potential president, to get rich. And the cover-up is becoming apparent to at an unbelievable level. And some of the latest information that's come out, Al, is the National Archives, basically, and Records Administration, NARA, they admitted that there are over 1,000 emails exchanged between Hunter Biden's firm, Rosemont Seneca Partners, and then Vice President Joe Biden during the Obama administration.
It looks is the content of those emails is it going to be made public?
At some point they are, because this is based on a FOIA request. Now, about 861 emails were sent and received by the Office of the President during that between January of 2011 and December of 2013, and 200 more emails are hidden due to the Biden White House citing executive privilege. So those 200 is going to be hard to break loose. That's going to have to come out through congressional oversight subpoena and probably some leakage if they come out at all.
Okay, but do you think they will come out at all, Jim?
Yeah, I think some of these will come out, because at this point, Joe Biden is so embroiled with this financial relationship that he had with his son that he denied, and the media denied, and it's so directly related to foreign governments. And you combine that with his mental capacity, you combine it with the basically, you know, problematic decision making that he's had with Afghanistan pullout, with continued operations and funding of Ukraine war. You combine it with the border problems. I think that he's under intense pressure from the Democratic Party. They're going to say, we can't keep covering this up forever. When they can't keep covering it up forever, that means that people are going to start leaking, releasing in order to get him, to force him out of office.
And I think that's... Yeah, Jimmy, I have to say one thing. Based on very, very recent history, specifically the last 3 to 4 years, or even longer if you go back to the Obama administration, I would say that unless they can change the content of those emails, if in fact they include derogatory information about the business relationship between Hunter and his dad, I think the Democrats are going to have to, just to save their own skin and to prove that they are truly an honest party that should be taken seriously. I think that information, Jim, must come out. Although so far that nobody's agreed with me.
Yeah, and I actually am. Unfortunately, what I see is the media doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down. The Department of Justice and the White House and the FBI all continuing to toe the line. And I think it has a lot to do with fear, but it also has to do with maintaining power. What they realize, what many of these powerful Democrats and even Republicans inside the Beltway understand, is if any too much of this information comes out, then too many Americans actually see through the facade, the lies, the corruption that's ongoing inside Washington, and they're all going to lose their future. And I think they're hanging on, just like we talked in the Daily Editorial on Thursday about some of the, you know, really old and incompetent or mentally incapable senators and congresspeople that are still sitting in office. They shouldn't be. But they can't give up the power, and they do it for their party's power. And unfortunately, I think the Democrats have gone so far to the extremes that they are willing to do anything to maintain that power. If they lose it, if they actually lose political power in the Senate and the House and the executive branch, they realize that it will not be business as usual for the next administration, and there will be ramifications and legal consequences for many of these corrupt individuals.
Well, Jim, you have two people that are in the forefront in this particular discussion. One of them is Dianne Feinstein. It could be guaranteed that she would be replaced by another Democrat. And the other one is Mitch McConnell. He's really, really in trouble right now. And I think you can almost guarantee that he would be replaced by a Republican, and consequently the balance of power replacing those two representatives really, really wouldn't change.
No, it wouldn't change then, but bottom line is the only way we change America, and this is really important for people to understand, there's no savior. You know, it's not just Donald Trump's going to come save you. It's when the American people are so fed up with the level of corruption that they stand up and don't put up with it anymore. I think there are people that disagree with me, but I have faith that with the right information, people will do that. I think that's what happened in 2016. They were fed up with Washington, D.C., why Trump came to power. Trump, unfortunately, was stuck with a bunch of Republicans that didn't like him, to this day still don't like him, and tried to undermine him all the way down the road because of their own personal power agendas. So the only way that this is going
to
change is when people stand up. Yeah. No, it only stops when these people act, when the average American says, you know what, I'm fed up with the economy, I'm fed up with the border, I'm fed up with the violence, I'm fed up with the foreign policy disasters, I'm fed up with incompetent old people that are, you know, that are dragging America down the tubes. I'm fed up with gender ideology. I'm fed up with diversity, equity, inclusion. And they say, that's enough, we're done. And that's what it's going to take. People have to stand up.
Jimmy, I don't think that's going to happen. It hasn't happened so far. Those are pretty important issues. I don't think it's going to happen, personally.
I think it will. 2016 is going to repeat itself in 2024.
Well, I certainly hope that you're right, James. That was basically our view on what's going on right now, politically, as of September 1st, when we're recording this thing.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Time for the next segment of KER Politics, featuring Jim McKinney and certainly featuring Big Al myself. I'm going to talk first of all about why Jimmy feels that Hunter Biden will probably have to go down because of some of the laws that he's broken. Jimmy, you're on, bud. Concise and accurate, please, sir.
Yeah, actually, I think our discussion here at the break was whether or not Hunter Biden will go down, and your position was that he wouldn't. And my position is I don't really care about Hunter Biden.
Okay.
What I care about is the fact that Joe Biden, as Vice President of the United States, as a candidate for president and President of the United States, used his position to benefit his family and his son's businesses in order to that directly undermine U.S. foreign policy and was a level of corruption that probably has never been seen in this nation. And I think that what matters here is holding Joe Biden accountable for using his office in order to enrich his family and to do that for negative consequences about foreign policy. And that is with China, that's with Romania, that's with Ukraine, firing the prosecutor. It's selling out America for his own personal financial interests.
Okay, I strongly disagree. And the only reason I disagree is I have done a fair amount of research on Hunter. I've read most of the books that have been written by him, including the one by a respected journalist, etc., etc. And there is something that is keeping him in the public eye in a positive sense, and I simply can't understand what that is. Anyway, let's go. Now that everybody knows where you're safe, where you stand, Jim, and where I stand,
I want to make sure that we've got that point. I could care less about Hunter Biden.
Okay,
what I care about is Joe Biden uses his
power. I agree. So let's go on. Here's a brief summary, you guys, summary about what's going economically in the United States. We talked about it in a daily editorial yesterday. It's interesting. Zero Hedge put up some of the graphs that are a very good illustration when it comes to what's going on economically in America. It ain't good at all. Jimmy, I'd like you to just kind of summarize it here.
Sure. Core inflation is up. Consumer price index is up slightly. These aren't big rises, but they are significant because, again, it's a continuation over months and months and months of inflation. So
Right. It's
not like a 3% inflation rate is actually a decline. It's actually an increase on top of what happened, you know, over the last year and a half, 2 years with the Biden administration overspending U.S. taxpayer dollars. That savings is down. That personal income is down, spending is up, which indicates that people are spending their savings.
Right.
And of course, credit card debt is maxed out for as high as it has been in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the other very strange indicators, M2, the actual money supply, is down to its lowest level of growth since 1933, the Great Depression.
Right.
So that's an interesting indicator. And of course, pending home sales now, the difference year over year, transactions fell by 14%. So basically that's been since the 2008 crisis that we haven't had as much activity. These will have impacts on the upcoming quarter's statistics and should indicate that we are in negative growth rates.
Jimmy, I agree 100% with what you're saying. The one statistic that really, really caught my attention, because I knew it was going to happen eventually, and it's happened now, and that's the one dealing with home sales. Home sales are down. I take that personally because when I sold my condo, the price was off. Number one, it took me 7 months to sell it. Very, very nice condo located on a private golf course. It took me months to sell it. It should have sold overnight. And my cost based on comparisons in the neighborhood, was off 50% from what it should have been. Hurt me real bad, Jim.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You're seeing it in many, many markets around the country,
yeah,
especially in the commercial and rental markets in the major urban areas. And again, that has the big impact there is people working from home,
yeah,
major corporations not wanting to pay the overhead for that very expensive commercial real estate. And of course, that impacts the overall rental markets, and that will, in the long term, that's going to be a very big problem. I mean, we're going to see that coming up, especially in cities like San Francisco, where they're saying that's over 30% reduction in rents. I mean, that's huge. And those big cities have a big impact on the rest of the nation's economy.
Yes, they do. No question about that. As San Francisco goes in terms of real estate, so goes America, and the same is true for Los Angeles and other major cities.
Chicago, New York, Atlanta, you're seeing this across the board.
You bet. I'm really sorry to see that. Jimmy, we're at 6 minutes, 18 seconds right now. I'd like you to finish out this segment.
Yeah, so there's also some problems, delinquencies on credit card debt. Like, we've spent, more people are, like, credit card poor, paying these high interest rates than any time in the last decade. But then the actual default and the delinquencies on their payments is going up, which actually only compounds the problem for many of these credit card holders. And again, when you're looking at potential, you know, the Fed is actually trying to slow employment rates. They're trying to slow the economy down in order to get inflation down. These problems, when they combine together, will actually drive markets into probably some negative territory. And of course, with the craziness in the bond markets, with these inverted bond yields, there's all kinds of problems that we've gotten indicator after indicator after indicator. And I want to remind people that back in 2007, just watch The Big Short. It's a great example of that. The professionals did not see it coming or ignored it. They ignored the financial crisis of 2008, 2009. And of course, it took really people. I refinanced a house in summer of 2007, and I did it at under, I wanted to be 25% below what I could manage because I had expected a decline in the market. So I saw it coming. People can see this coming. But others do not because they ignore it and they think it's going to go on forever. And it's been a long time since we've had a major problem. I think it's coming. It took a year and a half before it actually hit in 2007, 2008. And I think we're in that same boat right now, Al.
Nothing goes on forever, Jimmy. No question about that. Okay, you guys, real quick break for the top of the hour news on the stations that carry this great show.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Back to the Corlin Political Report, used to be called the Corlin Economics Report. But Jimmy and I, aside from giving a basic report card to the American economy and the economies of other countries around the world, really don't specialize in economic data. We specialize in opining on political actions. And the one that we're going to do here is something that came out on Thursday, August 31st. There was in the aftermath of a terrible hurricane that occurred down in Florida, the subject of looting was brought to the forefront by the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, and by probably close to one of the strongest individuals attempting to gain the presidency of the United States. as Ron DeSantis put it, in I think a very good term, he said, "You loot, we'll shoot." What he was saying is, I'd actually ask Jim to give his opinion on what DeSantis was saying. It's about time that some politicians really went to the forefront in terms of people who are flagrantly breaking the law. Jimmy, you're on, bud.
Yeah, so if you go back and actually look at DeSantis' statement, he was commenting on the region that was hit, and he said, you know, a lot of people, and I'm going to summarize here, a lot of people around this area, they believe in the Second Amendment, and I've seen signs around here, basically, and you ought to consider this, you loot, we shoot. So that was his direct quote. It was an indicator, and he's basically saying, hey, look, there's no reason in the world to go around here and hurt your neighbors and take things from people, and you don't know what's going to be behind that door that you try to break into. And I think that's a very important statement to say, because we have had significant problems with a lot of violence and looting. We're seeing it on a daily basis in Chicago and LA and New York and Boston, where mass groups of people are running in and looting stores during broad daylight without a natural disaster. And so what he's saying is, we have this disaster here. You better not do anything about it. If you do, we're going to take very strong actions on it. And he had it with a bunch of National Guard folks standing behind him, which I think was a very bold statement, but it also probably gives people comfort that there is some semblance of law and order that will be upheld in those crisis zones after the hurricane went through.
I agree, Jim, 100%. You know, it's, I think that it was very appropriate for DeSantis to say something like that, given his political aspirations. Looting private property, which occurred in Seattle during the upheaval, I'm going to use the word upheaval there, and looting private property, which happened in Missouri years ago, is simply something that cannot be tolerated. If somebody wants to tolerate living above the law, they really ought to live someplace else, Jim.
Yeah. What has happened in America? And I'm going to go right back to the summer of 2020,
right,
with President Trump and the attacks on every major city in this country, over 200 cities, a couple of billion dollars worth of damage, cities burned to the ground in many cases, certainly in urban areas, and often the low-income urban areas, burned to the ground, all kinds of violence, a large number of people hurt, a couple of dozen people killed, murdered by the violence. And if you remember, there was a move on the White House by BLM Antifa protesters, and they burned the church down across the street from the White House. And if you remember, General Milley had walked across for a picture with the president in front of that church in order to make a statement. The president was trying to make a statement of strength and confidence. And then Milley the next day actually apologized for being involved and said he shouldn't have been there for the political view. What he did was he undermined confidence. He basically said the Department of Defense and the military will not support putting down the violence and the insurrection that was going on in that summer. At the same time, when you rolled forward to January 6th, he withheld National Guard from supporting the Capitol Police for quite a long time, which allowed the violence to escalate in order to exacerbate the problem to target the President of the United States in these latest hearings. We have seen this unbelievable level of acceptance and tolerance by senior officials in many of these cities that have destroyed the economies and destroyed the safety of people in those cities, and they have done nothing about it. And to see Ron DeSantis to stand up and say, we will not tolerate that in this natural disaster, I think is a very important statement. And actually, it should have been done in 2020. But unfortunately, too many rhinos and too many people that were afraid of the media,
right,
in the Republican Party and advisors to President Trump didn't allow him to put the National Guard to stop a lot of the violence. And that's unfortunate.
I have to agree 100% on that one, Jim. You know, the violence was never stopped in Seattle a couple summers ago, even when it got to the point that a Seattle Police Department precinct was destroyed, physically destroyed. And, I mean, to me, that's just stupid, Jimmy.
Well, and then you had the Portland Federal Courthouse that went on for months, violent attacks. And how many people have been rolled up by the Department of Justice on that when they were attacking a federal building for months on end? And, you know, let me tell you the difference between now, today's Democrat, progressive, Marxist ideologues that run a lot of these cities that are deteriorating rapidly, and what happened back in the 1968 riots in Chicago with the DNC convention. With there have been lots of riots out there. Mayor Daley, one of the most powerful Democrats ever in history that controlled the entire machine, knew better than to allow that violence to continue in that rioting. And he actually issued a shoot-to-kill order for rioters and looters in downtown Chicago in 1968. You have seen nothing like that from, you know, these leaders in these cities that have just been destroyed,
right,
by both violence, the BLM riots, Antifa riots, and the ongoing violence that continues because of that lack of support as they try to defund the police.
You know, I agree 1,000% on that, and it is simply boggling my mind when I see some of the actions that have occurred in some of our major cities, and when they are simply, when those actions are simply swept under the rug. I don't get it, Jim. I am very, very uncomfortable is all I can say, bud.
Well, yeah, and the reason why a lot of people don't understand it because they don't see it, because they don't get the information on it, because the media, the corporate media, protects them and protects the Biden administration, these Democratic hellholes, from the people from actually understanding it. And what it takes is so much violence that where people walking down the street actually are fearful for their lives and their futures before they actually take action. And it's very interesting because there was a huge riot in L.A. this weekend. A bunch of kids, you know, got involved and just basically just, you know, robbed a bunch of city, mall issues. And I think it was in Torrance, California. Then they started, there was some shooting going on. and the sad thing is the next day, one of the local councilmen was out there talking to the local business people, trying to talk to him about, hey, we're going to make it better. And he was robbed. That's how bad it's getting right now.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. And the only way that we're going to make this country better if higher moral values come up. And they have to. No question about it. And the Democrats have to adhere to that same philosophy. You guys, we're going to be right back to wrap up KER Politics. Here to wrap up KER Politics. Got a really good subject we're going to pine on right now, and it goes directly in line with what has been in the mass media the last couple of days. I happen to be a Catholic, as you guys know, and I respect the Pope of the Catholic Church to an extent. I think he's making some mistakes, but he's only human, which kind of goes against the Catholic belief. But I want to say one thing. He came out yesterday, and I was besieged by residents in the facility, in my home, by what the Pope said. The Pope said that we should have, if we were really Christian, we should have totally wild open borders. And most of the people where I live agree with that 100%. I'm going to bring up something right now that I think proves how wrong the Pope of the Catholic Church is. Let's talk about fentanyl deaths, and let's talk about fentanyl deaths that are occurring in my part of the world. My part of the world is very, very liberal, and the headline in The Seattle Times, which is a very liberal newspaper, today was King County's fentanyl death toll is on pace to surpass the record of a few months ago. Now, when people discuss open borders, you know, theoretically maybe it's okay. And I will say that open borders, theoretically, I would maintain is not okay. And the reason I say that is because open borders right now with Mexico attract criminals. So what does that result in the United States? Well, a larger proportion of ODs have involved the synthetic opiate fentanyl recently. Where does it come from? You don't get it by robbing your local drugstore. You get it but from illicit sources, and those illicit sources bring fentanyl in because primarily of the open borders. Open borders are causing deaths in the United States. In King County, where I live in, the death toll will surpass the record of just a few months ago. That is the best argument that I can think of for not having open southern borders. Jimmy, I know you feel probably the same way that I do. Give us your opinion on this, would you?
Sure, yeah. So the Pope is absolutely wrong here, because if, in fact, he was... Most of the countries he's talking about that come to the United States illegally from South America, they're basically from Christian communities as well.
Right.
So if they were really Christian, they'd be taking care of their own people and they wouldn't be moving up this way. So you completely discount that argument in my mind. If they were being persecuted as Christians, that would be a different story, but that's not what we're talking about. Let me tell you something else that is incredibly disgusting with the Catholic Church. They make billions of dollars from the U.S. federal government supporting the both transit and then the arrival of illegal immigrants in the United States because of subsidies in order to actually take care of the Catholic charities make billions of dollars doing that.
Right.
So this is a business. This is a business. And oh, by the way, who's facilitating the vast majority of these illegal movements to the United States border? Human traffickers. So in my mind, if you want to solve this problem, then you start penalizing, arresting the charities that are facilitating the illegal transit of these people up here, because the human traffickers, the corrupt administration officials in South America, the mob bosses, basically, the cartels are moving these people because they're making a fortune at it. And so are
human trafficking,
the Catholic charities.
Human trafficking, Jimmy, for what it's worth, in my opinion, is probably, aside from murder, one of the most despicable crimes that's occurring frequently within the United States.
No kidding. And again, for those people that have taken the time and made the effort to see Sound of Freedom, then you look at the number of illegal children that have been trafficked into the United States. The United States is the number one recipient of illegal child trafficking for pedophiles. So here we have a pope and we have a church that is pretending to be interested in the betterment and the welfare of these people, but oh, by the way, shouldn't they be taken care of at home? Shouldn't their governments be taking care of them? Shouldn't we be stopping this criminal activity? Fentanyl is absolutely the most devastating. It's killing tens of thousands of Americans every year. But the human trafficking is actually destroying lives of people that are still alive. And I just, to me, to listen to something like that is so not only ignorant, but it's actually corrupt and it's facilitating corruption.
And I agree 100%. I'm a little surprised that the New York Times gave the Pope as much space as they did to argue in favor of open borders. It was damn near a quarter of a page, Jimmy.
Yeah, I absolutely am not surprised the New York Times would do that, because this is consistent with the Democratic policy to bring more illegal immigrants in the United States to change the demographics and potentially, if you want to look at it cynically, to get more ballots out there. Not more votes, more ballots, and then they can manipulate the ballots as they see fit.
I am absolutely sold now on the concept. I started to think about it. I started to think about it a little bit on the idealistic side when I read the article. But I have to say, this fentanyl death toll, which is right now, as I said, on pace to surpass the record in Western Washington, which is a highly, highly liberal area. You know, tell some of the mothers and fathers who are experiencing the deaths of their children, thanks to a large extent to illegals and criminals coming across the border, I don't want to say freely, because they have to sneak in to get in, and this is the best argument that there is, Jim, against open borders right now. You want to wrap it up? We got about a minute.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes, right? We're about 9:50, and I think we're at about 7:30. Okay. But the Bay Area, so the San Francisco Bay Area, on the 30th of August, in a 24-hour period, had 18 people die from fentanyl overdose.
Yeah.
18 people. We're seeing children, you're seeing law enforcement, you're seeing emergency responders that respond to these deaths actually get infected and potentially die extremely sick from fentanyl. The level of deceit that the media gives to cover up the administration and the Democratic policies that are destroying the sovereignty of this nation.
Right.
Putting a tremendous burden on the taxpayers, putting a tremendous burden on the major urban areas. I mean, New York is having to declare an emergency. Even some of the southern border Democrat governors are having to declare emergencies because they can't support this massive inflow of illegal immigration. We're talking about over 7 million people in the last 2.5 years under the Biden administration. And of course, with the continuation of this effort, we're going to be approaching 10 million people, which puts us at unbelievable numbers of illegal immigrants that the cities, states, schools, hospital systems all have to absorb. And how do they do that? And how do you get taxes from people that are working under the table? You know, this is the whole facade is about the equivalent to what they're doing with trying to stop voter ID. It's really to protect these illegal immigrants and be able to get more votes. It's disgusting, disturbing, and it's destroying the nation.
It has destroyed the nation. It's not in the process of destroying the nation. It has destroyed a very important part of the country that I grew up in and that I continue to love. You guys, I hate to wrap up our show on such a dour note, but you know, the truth is the truth. Stick around. We will be back next week. Stop and think about some of the things we talk about. They are critical. We'll see you next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.